last century, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. Joachim Cooter. I'm going to step back from the mic and join you right here with John Trudell in just a minute.
Hey, thanks everyone for listening to Undercurrents here on the radio and for making this music a part of your day. After more than 17 years of daily programming, we're retiring the daily Undercurrents radio programs and saying a fond farewell to our radio friends, engaged listeners, partners, and supporters. We put 6,500 shows out onto the airwaves, and your feedback to the station, your letters, social posts, and survey responses, the feedback's just been beautiful. It feels like we really made a connection. Thank you. I'm Gabriela Castellan, and we have new projects underway which we invite you to check out at undercurrentsradio.net. Come by anytime.
It's Undercurrents, coming to you with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the friends of Undercurrents who support the show directly, and everyone who supports the station. Thank you all. Still ahead, Silvana Estrada, Joan Osborne, and let's remember now, John Trudell.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, on 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
On the next episode of Neuroemergent, I talk with Leah Blankenship, founder of the Neurodiversity Alliance at the University of Oregon.
Running a group entirely with neurodivergent people, it comes with its own challenges. So much of what defines academic success for these students is just being a successful adult.
Join us at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 27th, for a conversation about neurodiversity from a Gen Z perspective.
Powered by Riverside.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Psychedelics, we've done a number of shows on psychedelics, and there's so many different ways to approach this, and there's so much beautiful potential to come out of it. And they've been approved for therapies recently, as we know, but their positive impacts really go beyond that. They can also help us heal our sexuality, find wholeness, and reconnect with pleasure. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The psychedelic experience can connect us to ourselves, to our relationships, to the earth, and to the pleasure of having an embodied experience. And today's guest asserts that psychedelics have been somewhat co-opted as a treatment for mental health issues, which limits their potential to facilitate thriving, love, and sexual satisfaction. And I ask, in this era of rampant anxiety and depression, does pleasure provide a real antidote, and how can psychedelics help? Our guest today is Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of the book Embrace Pleasure, How Psychedelics Can Heal Our Sexuality. Dee Dee is a psychotherapist, educator, clinical supervisor, consultant, and leading voice in the development of psychedelic integration psychotherapy, specifically with survivors of sexual trauma. Goldpaw is the facilitator of ketamine-assisted retreats for both couples and individuals and has taught and published widely on psychedelics and sexuality, trauma, gender, and spirituality. A frequent presenter at international conferences, Goldpaw lives in Woodstock, New York. Well, hello, Dee Dee, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, what possessed you to write this book? What was your aim in writing this book, Embrace Pleasure. What an incredible book.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's certainly a great opening question because I really kind of had two impulses within me that inspired me to write this book. One was sort of more political slash academic, and that is that I've been a therapist for 17 years, the past 10 of which have been working very deeply in the field of psychedelic assisted psychotherapy and psychedelic integration therapy. And what I saw was this sort of co-opting within the psychedelic movement in this movement towards trying to rebrand psychedelics as this respectable medical treatment. And they are that. I mean, psychedelics in medical clinical contexts have saved people's lives. And we're just at the beginning of understanding the full potential of when psychedelics are integrated into the mental health system. But there's a big caveat, and that is the psychedelic experience can also be joyful, ecstatic, erotic, embodied. And in order to sort of rebrand them as treatments, we've overlooked some of what I think are the most powerful healing mechanisms of these experiences. And I really wanted to write about that.
So you're talking about the mystical aspect and the pleasure inducing potential.
Pleasure, connection, increased empathy, increased openness, feeling connected to the earth. Like you put it so well in my intro, I couldn't have said it better, right? All of these things that get overlooked when we think about how we do psychedelic assisted therapy, which is to have someone in a room focused on their individual inner process and their problems. And I wanted to actually present a coherent narrative that people could think about, is there a different way to intentionally and respectfully and in the context of the sacred approach these medicines that are connected to the earth, connected to other people, and connected to our bodies?
And why do you feel that the pleasure potentials have been overlooked in psychedelic research in the last 30 years?
It's a complex question with many answers. And the first I think I've already spoken to is that we've tried to take psychedelics and wash it clean of their reputation from the hippie movement in the 1960s and make psychedelics respectable. And certainly books like Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind, you know, turned people on to the idea that psychedelics could be impactful for them who never would have considered this before.
That's cool. Yeah.
And I also want to speak to the fact that sexual harm has occurred in psychedelic spaces and even within clinical trial contexts. So I think in an effort to create ethically rigorous and safe environments, we have become very phobic of talking about pleasure and bodies and sexuality. Because to me, there is a huge difference in creating a safe space where we can talk about these things and experience and be in touch with our own erotic energy and abuse occurring. They are two completely different experiences. And so I wanted to open the space where we could say we can be ethically rigorous and we can create spaces where people are not abused or exploited. And our sexuality is an intrinsic part of our spiritual identity and should be welcomed into this work.
Well, growing up, and this is, I'm quoting you right now, growing up in a culture steeped in the sexual shame that springs from the influence of Christianity and shaping cultural attitudes towards sex, experiencing the unwholesome reality of the sexualization of children and objectification of women, unhealthy gender socialization that deprives men of a range of feeling, these are all forms of sexual violence.
Yeah.
So when you talk about sexual harm, I mean, there's a spectrum. So can you kind of define that spectrum for us?
Yes, absolutely. In the book, I go to great lengths to talk about my conceptualization of sexual trauma. And sexual trauma can absolutely be the things that we're sort of acclimated to understand are harmful, such as sexual abuse, sexual assault. And it's easy for us to identify the impact of those kind of harms, even though they are very prevalent in our society. And in the past decade, we've really tried to reckon with that as a culture. However, in my clinical practice, because I am focused on working with sexual trauma survivors and working with people who just want to experience a more holistic and positive relationship with their sexuality, what I've come to find is that we have experiences all the time that get folded into what we experience as normal because they're culturally sanctioned as the way things are. But they can actually be really, really deeply, deeply impactful to us in harmful ways. So when I talk about sexual trauma, really what I'm talking about is any experience that deprives us of a right to be present with pleasure, to be connected to our bodies, and be connected to other people, because I believe that is our birthright. And so when I'm looking at sexual trauma, I'm looking much more robustly at all of the experiences we have, including the negative impact that comes from Christian supremacy, the negative impacts that come from a lack of positive sex education, of body shaming. So this is not trauma that's on the same scale as being abused or assaulted, but they are traumas nonetheless that live in our body and enduring.
Well, that's why they came up with CPTSD, right? CPTSD.
That's, yeah.
Complex. You know, this is this repetitive brain conditioning that's abusive or the traumatic. It's a traumatic in a different way than, you know, being raped or molested or something, you know, extreme like that.
Yeah, this is an important distinction because CPTSD is, you are correct, right? They're repetitive relational experiences of harm. And I'm actually expanding the definition of sexual trauma even more than that, because CPTSD is generally thought of as when someone is in an overtly harmful experience relationally, and it goes on for a long period of time, that it has a unique kind of way of showing up in their body, in their symptoms.
Right.
I think that there's just all of these things that we consider normal that actually prevent us from being as in touch with pleasure as we can be.
It's amazing. You know, I mean, this world is so screwed up. It's like, I just have a hard time right now feeling proud of being a human. You know, it's like, it's just such a complicated mess. Okay, so what part do you think pleasure should play in psychedelic healing? Because obviously from your book, you're not against psychedelic healing and all of these, you know, this, the appropriation of the medical model, of course, that's what we've had to do. Michael Pollan represented that very well. I read Michael Pollan's book and I thought, this guy doesn't know half as much about psychedelics as I do, but he's a great representative for the common man because he never did any of this stuff. And I love the way he takes things on like that. But in any case, you know, what part do you think pleasure should play in psychedelic healing? I know I had a lot of pleasure. I took LSD at least 75 times in my 20s, and I had sex on LSD several times, and it was awesome. It was like no other sex I've ever had. It's like, but you know, and I feel like that was healing for me. But you tell me, I mean, what part should pleasure play in the healing process? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the way I begin to answer that question is to make a distinction between pleasure and leisure, because I think in our society, we are steeped in so much stimulation and so many things that are pleasurable, right? That could be scrolling on your phone or, you know, watching media. And we experience that and typically name it as pleasurable, but I am not making an argument that those things heal you. So when I'm talking about pleasure as a healing force, really what I'm talking about are these moments where we are awake and alive, connected to our bodies, and most importantly, this quality of mindfulness where we're savoring the sensual experiences of life. And they can be sexual, but they can also just be sensual, earth-connected, alive and awake. I think those moments do heal us. And what the difference is our quality of awareness, mindfulness, and meaning that we bring to those moments. And I think psychedelics are uniquely helpful at connecting to that particular type of pleasure.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that the title of your book is about sexuality, because I think you're talking about sensuality. It goes beyond the pleasure of sexual experience. The way that you're talking about it, you know, it's integrating with nature and I love it. It's just so,
yeah,
it's so beautiful.
You're right. I mean, look, it's a good book title. And I am talking about something that's bigger than just sex, because the concept that I use in the book that I think is helpful for people to understand is that sex is one expression of what I would call the erotic. And the erotic is really a life force energy that has very much to do not just with our sexual expression, but with our creative expression, with our connection to the divine, with our connection to the earth, with our connection to other people. It's our life force and how it's expressed. And sex is one very, very powerful way that that life force gets expressed.
You know, I appreciate
much bigger.
I appreciate the way that you quote Freud, and you give credit where credit is due. I mean, these guys were living in the most male chauvinist society ever, I mean, Victorian. But you know, he had some insight, and you know, I appreciate that you give him credit for that. You know, it's such a confusing. I don't think we're very far along right now. I don't think that psychology is very highly evolved as a science. Now, I'm like a total student of psychology, Jung and Freud, et cetera. And I know a lot. I know, but I think, you know, people like you are helping us push the boundaries of a broader understanding. Okay, so let's talk about the medicines. Let's talk about, okay, in the book, there's a certain psychedelics that you focus on. Now, obviously, like I said in my intro, you do ketamine-assisted therapy. Mm-hmm. But there's all these other ones that you talk about, MDMA, LSD, psilocybin. You're talking about a spectrum of psychedelics, ayahuasca. You're talking about a spectrum of psychedelics that have really different effects, and you know, so what medicines are helpful to our sexuality?
Yeah, well, you know, I do write about this in the book pretty extensively, and a point I make early in the book is that when we think about psychedelics and sexuality, many people think about sex on psychedelics. And I do talk about that, but it's, for me, kind of one of the least interesting pieces to explore. I am much more interested in thinking about what are the post-acute effects of psychedelics on our sexuality. So in other words, when we encounter these different medicines and we experience them through our bodies in different ways, how does that change us as sexual beings? So I have a chapter in the book where I break down each of the different medicines and talk about what I think is uniquely powerful about each of them to heal. And I'm not really privileging one over the other, because I think if you're looking to heal sexual trauma, there are certain medicines that can be very helpful for that. If you're looking to connect more with a partner, if you are looking to connect more with God or whatever your idea of God is and bring sacredness into your experience of eroticism, there are different medicines that I think kind of lean more in that direction. And that to say, people experience all medicines differently. So finding out what really speaks to you and calls to you and becomes the medicine that will help you heal is going to be an individual process. And for me, my sexual healing journey was very much centered around using Wachuma medicine, which is mescaline. And this is like the forgotten psychedelic, right? Like, it's the least studied, even though it's in the Western paradigm, it's our oldest psychedelic medicine. It kind of gets ignored for a lot of reasons that I go into in the book. But I can share a little bit my own healing from sexual trauma. Early in that healing process, I had many ayahuasca experiences that were very, very helpful in me healing the overt experience of trauma. But when I was in Peru and experienced Wachuma medicine, which is mescaline is the active ingredient, active component of that, that was when I realized the full depth that these medicines have to offer us, because it was being re-embodied. It was experiencing pleasure and awakeness, connection to my body without trauma processing. So I really came to evolve this understanding that, yes, the medical approach to psychedelic healing is we look at how we can reduce symptoms. But for me, the real healing was when I was able to step into pleasure, when I was able to step into that part of my life that went beyond just healing symptoms. It made me fully human again, connected to my personhood and my sense of pleasure and aliveness.
You know, you're talking about transforming your relationship to trauma.
Yeah.
And this is kind of what your specialty is, because you help people heal from sexual trauma. And I just find that's fascinating. Now, I've had a little, you know, some sexual trauma in my life, and I've taken ayahuasca, you know, 16 times. I kept track, and I was keeping track of the dose and everything. And I was getting a pretty serious dose. And, but I don't think it really helped me. It wasn't the right one for me. To like completely transform my relationship to trauma. But so what are some of the ways that you've worked with sexual trauma survivors after psychedelic experiences? Because you do integration, you know, there's so much that we could talk about, and we should have another show or two, because, you know, this whole idea of a sitter, and if somebody is going to sit with me, how qualified do they need to be? How empathetic do they need to be? You know, how much money do I have to pay them? I mean, it can be super expensive, you know, but anyway, that's another question.
I have lots of opinions on all those things.
I'm sure.
So okay. I got a little sidetracked. So your original question was about how I work with sexual trauma survivors.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, it really is going to depend on the survivor, but I'll just, outline for your audience that psychedelic assisted therapy means that the client is taking the medicine at that time. And I do ketamine assisted therapy work, which is the only legal work we can really do in therapeutic practice in the United States right now. And I do work with sexual trauma survivors with ketamine. Integration means it's psychotherapeutic support after the person has a medicine experience. So I published a paper in an academic journal way before this book came out, or a few years before the book came out. And it really was the first paper that was looking at the role of spirituality in healing from sexual trauma and psychedelic integration. So I focus heavily on the body. What were the somatic experiences that you are able to reconnect to that this medicine may have offered you? And those experiences can be an ability to process the trauma that has been stored in the nervous system for a really long time and release it. And I'll want to work with somebody to help them to further release any trauma that's being held in their nervous system. But somebody also might experience pleasure, joy, sensuality. And I am equally interested in that experience, because these are sensations that trauma survivors may not have experienced in a very long time. And in fact, after sexual trauma, people might not be connected with their body at all. And then I would say the other thing that's very unique about my work is that I really actively include spirituality and spiritual practice, whatever that means for someone. So I don't push any particular agenda, and it's a really non-theistic approach, meaning if someone relates to a higher power, I'm working with that in the language that they use. But if somebody relates to spirituality through just what is my connection to the world and other people, for me, that is a spiritual experience. How connected am I? So I'm really actively working with people after sexual trauma to help them learn to feel safe and connected. And I think our experience of coming to see ourselves as whole, divine, and lovable is deeply connected to a spiritual healing process.
I revealed the fact that I had sex on LSD several times, and I'm wondering, what is your attitude towards that kind of thing? I mean, do you encourage people to, or when is it a good idea? I mean, this is back in the early 70s, and I was this is the sexual revolution. Everybody, I mean, you put a joint with somebody and you're having sex for the next, you know, hour and a half. It's like a different reality than now. But I'm just saying, do you think, you know, when would
you,
you know, what's your attitude about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, first, when we're talking about my relationships with my clients, I don't encourage them to do anything, including just taking psychedelics. My feeling is when I suggest or encourage something, I become then accountable for what happens to that person. So I'm not necessarily suggesting anything, but I am working with what clients are interested in bringing to me. So to answer your question directly, what do I think about sex on psychedelics? Well, for me, as a sexual trauma survivor, I can tell you that it's an overwhelming experience that doesn't sit well in my nervous system. Because for me, the most psychedelic sex of all was really learning how to have sober sex and be embodied and alive and awake in a safe way. Now, that said, people have been taking medicine and having sex for a very long time. So it would be silly to not acknowledge that that happens. And my approach to it is really around harm reduction. So what I help people with is to make consent agreements before they take psychedelics together to figure out how to have a safe sexual experience. Oh. I recommend that people have experiences with people that they know and trust rather than a new partner that they don't know if their body can really trust that person.
Well, you know,
and I do a lot of work about establishing emotional boundaries as well.
And that's the essence of consent agreements, is emotional boundaries, right?
Emotional and physical boundaries.
I think there's a huge market for consent agreements. You know, teaching people how to make agreements, you know, because everybody, I mean, the way that we process love in this culture is so immature. It's just so infantile, you know, sort of like, oh, I'm falling in love, you know, and it's sort of like all based on this, like, infatuation experience. And I think, you know, marriage is a contract. Okay, so we know that legally. But I mean, shouldn't we have something less than that? I mean, for a serious intimate relationship?
Of course. I mean, love is a drug too, right? We're having this whole neurohormonal experience in our bodies when we really want someone. And it can, like any medicine, make us feel altered. And sometimes the things that we agree to and want in the throes of that kind of erotic passion can be things we come to regret. And the questions, the critical questions that I work on with people in my psychotherapy practice, in, you know, couples that come in and they're maybe thinking about using psychedelics, is really, how do we bring together all of the parts of yourself that want and feel desire, the parts of you that feel scared and need boundaries? How do we take all that into account to develop a way that you can love each other that's based on respect, trust, and mutual agreement? And you're right, that requires spiritual maturity, right? It requires that we show up for a kind of way of relating that might feel initially less sexy, but in fact can go so much deeper erotically.
Yeah, I think we have a need for counseling around making agreements, around making consent contracts or whatever, that where we put things in writing, and it's not like we're being lawyers or anything, we're just being clear. So I really appreciate that you approach that, and I really appreciate you in general, and I want to thank you for being on the show today, because you're delightful, and you know, I could talk to you for a long time about mysticism. Do you consider yourself a spiritual teacher? You know, I think you are, but you know, I'm just getting to know you, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Paul. It was just wonderful to speak to you.
There's so much more we could explore, but we have run out of time today. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website.
Yes.
EmbracePleasure.com. Wow. All one word. EmbracePleasure.com. And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry. You can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. And I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dee Dee Goldpaw, author of Embrace Pleasure, How Psychedelics Can Heal Our Sexuality. A very unique and readable and entertaining and educational book. I highly recommend it. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO FM. That's www.kboo.fm in Portland, Oregon. Or perhaps you subscribe to our podcast for free, which you can find at divination.com, spelled D-I-V-I-nation.com, as well as by searching Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel, where you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe. Anyway, please feel free to forward a link to your friends. And this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways and about Pathways podcasts. Thanks again to Dee Dee Goldpaw and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.